So now on the Innovation Show, we welcome Director of Social Search and Performance Media for the company of Huskies, David Hayes. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, Ed.
So today we're going to talk about the rise of messenger apps. It's something that a lot of people have missed. This kind of inflection point took place at the end of 2015, where social networks were surpassed by messenger apps. And there's a whole rise in a new commerce around messenger apps. So let's talk about that, David.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting kind of, I suppose, tipping point, as you've kind of mentioned, at the end of 2015. You know, the four big kind of social networking apps were kind of surpassed by the four big kind of messenger apps. So you think of kind of, you know, like WhatsApp as being the big kind of, you know, kind of Goliath and that, and kind of WeChat as well from the Asian market. But it kind of signals a kind of, I suppose, a seminal tipping point or kind of shift in how people are kind of starting to communicate through digital. And it's been predominantly driven by kind of mobile. And it's interesting, you know, that I kind of recently gave this kind of presentation at 3XE. And it's, if you got to think that by 2020, 5 billion people on Earth will have kind of smartphones, that is kind of now the kind of interface that people are kind of, you know, having to communicating with each other through. So mobile is really driving this whole kind of behavior of kind of using messenger apps. And it's completely in line with the kind of behaviors that were there from kind of SMS. So everybody knows that, you know, SMS is a kind of behavior that everyone's kind of familiar with. So it's not a big leap to jump into kind of messenger apps. And plus, you know, and there's kind of three seminal kind of, or reasons why kind of messenger apps are kind of like perfectly primed to kind of take over, I suppose. So, you know, the first one of those is really kind of, you know, the ubiquity of them. You know, they're everywhere, you know, and you've heard all the kind of crazy stats out there. You know, there's more mobile phones on the planet than there are toothbrushes, and all these kind of, like, you know, sound bites that people love kind of banging out. WeChat, particularly in the Asian market, has been phenomenal, like, because WeChat is not just a messenger app, it's actually an interface to so many other things. So from WeChat, you know, you can control, you know, you can check into your hotel, you can play games, you can order a taxi cab, you can order flowers from it. So there's a whole host of things that you can actually do through the WeChat platform. You know, and then at the other side of it, really, it's where it's the changing behaviors of consumers, and really, you know, what I suppose the industry likes to call millennials, or even the younger generation, which is Gen Z, or are really kind of adopting different kind of behaviors, you know. So they're really looking at kind of new platforms, kind of like Snapchat, which have kind of got this ephemeral, you know, ephemeral quality to them. So you're sharing kind of pieces of information and then they're gone, because they're kind of concerned about their privacy. You know, they understand that they have a kind of private self and a public self. So they're quite a sophisticated audience. So those three kind of elements or attributes are kind of really kind of make it perfect kind of conditions for the kind of rise of kind of messenger apps.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because you mentioned WeChat, and when you think of that, the proliferation of that throughout Asia, and then because when people think of apps, they think there's a plethora of apps out, and there is millions and millions of apps out there, but there's actually only a few apps people use on a regular basis. And a lot of them happen to be owned in our locality by Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, and we were speaking this morning, I suppose before this, and you know, I was mentioning Scott Galloway and L2 Intelligence, and, you know, he does a great thing called The Daily. It's a kind of a bi-weekly kind of roundup of, it's called Winners and Losers. And it's a look at the kind of like wider kind of global tech scene, you know, and his latest one is looking at the kind of, I suppose, and he's been kind of mentioning as well, just over the last kind of couple of weeks, about the rise of messenger apps, but also kind of the demise of apps as an interface. So the five biggest apps out there, like you say, I mean, you know, they're all owned by Facebook, essentially, you know. Yeah. So Messenger, WeChat, or kind of Messenger, its own platform, WhatsApp, you know, all of those. And then outside of that, you've got Snapchat and Uber.
Yeah.
And the rest of the other apps, people are not really using. Now, I mean, personally, I use other apps on my phone. You know, I might use the Journal for a news piece, or I'd look at RTE, or I'd look at, you know, maybe the Guardian, as kind of publisher ones. But as we see, even within Facebook's feed, you know, from a news point of view, you start... is, you know, it was starting to disseminate the majority of the news to that. So even for brands in the business that we're in, you know, I mean, the whole idea of branded apps is a concept that's completely kind of
you're almost becoming part of an RSS feed. You know, your battle is to get into the feed of the apps people are using, and in a way, you know, everybody's focused on the social networks, but the point you're making is, there's actually a move even from the nets to the messenger apps,
yeah,
and the whole rise in bots and all that. It's all part of this kind of mix, call it a perfect storm for people who are trying to get in there,
yeah,
or call it a Goldilocks effect for those who have bought all those different apps. And, you know, funny you mention the ones that Facebook don't own, being Uber and Snapchat. But Facebook aren't they? Messenger and Uber are partnering,
yeah,
and there's some partnerships going on there that are interesting as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the partnerships are quite interesting. You know, it's way back, there was a guy called Chris Messina back in 2015 wrote a really good piece on this idea of conversational commerce. So he was kind of, you know, and he's a lead developer, at Uber. He comes from the early days of Twitter. He's the guy who invented kind of hashtag, or is known for inventing the idea of the hashtag. But he's saying, look, you're going to be utilizing chat and messages or other natural language interfaces to interact with people, brands, and services in a kind of seamless and fluid way, like, you know. So that's what people are looking for. They don't want to jump from one platform to another platform to another platform. And Facebook are really kind of owning that space at the moment. So they are having partnerships, like you say, with Uber it was last year that Facebook, you could actually order an Uber through your Facebook Messenger. More recently, KLM are kind of doing, partnerships with Facebook so that you can download your boarding card, check in directly through the Messenger app. So, and there's two kind of ways that you're kind of essentially doing it. It's essentially either doing it through a human interface, or, and then now other kind of platforms like Kick, for example, are looking at kind of bot platforms. So this idea of kind of, or even for example, Slack. So at work, we use Slack an awful lot as a kind of like internal communication tool. And you've got things like the Slack bot, you know, which kind of gives you helpful tips, and, you know, you can set it up quite easily. So we've got an emerging world of how we interface with the world, or how we communicate with it. So we're doing it through messenger apps, and we're essentially talking to, you know, either humans on one side or bots on the other.
Yeah, and for the bot thing, because just for our listeners who mightn't understand that, so the whole idea there is these are repetitive tasks or repetitive questions that might come up time and time again. It's almost like a robotic FAQ answer machine.
Yeah.
And it's kind of going, okay, these are the typical questions that it's artificial intelligence essentially that's going, these are the type of questions, these are the way I answer them. And it's very like, you know, we've talked before about Iron Man and this idea of Jarvis, the machine that knows the kind of questions, you knows your habits, but and it can answer those in real time. And there's a whole rise in the bot.
Yeah,
the bot acceptance as well by people kind of going, you know what, that's the bot. And there's kind of a little friendly, oh, there's little R2-D2 there, that will answer those questions. But it doesn't matter if that's a human or not.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of beg the question of, you know, and I suppose there's a lot of fear around it because, and rightly so, like, I mean, this, you know, it's kind of predicted by 2020, you know, generally, customers will manage 85% of all the relationships with an enterprise without interfacing with a human being, which is kind of frightening. Like, I mean, you know, when you pick up that phone, you know, and you get a kind of pre-recorded message, it's kind of quite frustrating. And you're looking for that human kind of connection. Bots kind of take it to a level where they kind of almost mimic the human experience, and you know, with the drive in artificial intelligence, and you can see this massive drive to get there. So Google really pushing hard with it, and you know, it's artificial intelligence, you know, recently beating one of the grandmasters in China at the I can't remember the game. Then there's IBM's Watson as an artificial intelligence piece, and Facebook as well. And they're putting masses of investment into this artificial intelligence piece. And, you know, people, even in my sector, in the marketing and advertising world, you know, most of our jobs are going to be under threat because of automated or kind of bot systems, where our roles will become, you know, what's your role anymore when we can simply do it? So I think we need to be, you know, as I suppose from a societal point of view and a cultural point of view, we need to kind of manage that as well. Yeah. But it is going to get a lot more seamless and fluid, these kind of interactions with, you know, companies and services and brands for that matter. So it's certainly an interesting time. Like,
it is. And when you think, when you just couple that with people are living longer, you know, you know, and people like Google are working on the longevity of humans.
Yeah.
So there's this whole thing as well. So you kind of go, what's the surplus of people? We're curing diseases all through technology. Everything's been helped by technology. People are living longer. There's more people in the world, but there's going to be less jobs essentially. And you kind of, it's off topic a little bit, but you kind of go, well, the future for people in work is actually going to be a very different world from where we were 20, 30 years ago, where, you know, finance and repetitive tasks and administration, etc., those kind of jobs will kind of drop by the wayside. And it's the more creativity and the context, because the machines or the AI doesn't understand context as much. So the creative right-brainers, and, you know, Dan Pink writes a book about the whole new mind, about right-brainers, why right-brainers will survive in the new world. The world has changed, and the shift has benefited those who would have lost out in the past. Very interesting times.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's incredibly interesting times. And I mean, you know, if we bring it a step further, I mean, it's even, you know, you look at the writings of, let's say, someone like Kevin Kelly, who, you know, and he's got a great book called What Technology Wants, you know. And it is quite scary because, I mean, you look at kind of, well, it's either scary or exciting, you know, and I think, you know, it's scary when everything is scary when you don't know about it, you know, so that's a human fear. So, you know, we get to that. But, you know, painting a picture of a future where, you know, Kelly kind of describes technology as actually starting to kind of like evolve, really understand itself. It gets into science fiction territory. We're into almost
Terminator.
Terminator, Asimov, iRobot, you know, where suddenly, you know, everything
but
that
they are based on reality. Like, that's the funny thing. Everybody thinks this is all science fiction. It's actually science fact. Yeah. And we've caught up there, you know. And you think about, I think about movies like Total Recall and the Johnny Cab, which was the little bot essentially driving you around. And we are at the point of driverless cars. There's already driverless cars on the road being tested. And, you know, it's probably no bot driving that car. That's your seat. Yeah. But that's your seat. That also changes the whole new ecosystem. What do people do when they're in the car now? They watch a movie. They'll no longer maybe listen to the radio. So that brings a whole new challenge and a whole new shift in the ecosystem as well.
But it's like you say, I mean, it comes into that creativity point of view. So the people that were creating and imagining up these worlds, it's now kind of come to pass. So they've kind of been at the forefront of the avant-garde of kind of, you know, fueling that imagination and bringing people along to kind of create it. So there is absolutely a role for imagination and creativity in that. Like, so I think it's even in our business, you know, when it comes down to it, yes, there's an awful lot being automated, let's say, in the marketing world or the advertising world. How do you engage with consumers? And I suppose, you know, even with the messenger piece, I was kind of slightly kind of surprised, even within the Irish market, of how little kind of knowledge there was from, let's say, you know, our clients or some of people working in the sector of, like, you know, they have an understanding of, they have no understanding that it's actually happening, you know. And that's, I can understand to a degree, because technology is moving at such a very fast pace, but it is incumbent on us to kind of keep an eye on it, or, you know, and because this is how people are kind of communicating. So people are kind of using these technologies in a way, and I think it's incumbent on people, you know, particularly working in that sector or whether it's communications of any degree, is to really understand them and actually kind of tap into it. So, I mean, particularly from the messenger side, we have an awful lot of clients who will come to us saying, you know, can you help us with our social media strategy? And more often than not, they're looking at kind of like, can you help us with our Facebook page and can you help us with Twitter? And, you know, we've got this message and we want to push it out. And it's like, well, that's a fundamental kind of problem there, because that's not what social media is. That's just looking at a channel perspective. Social is really about this kind of relationship and how you're using societal kind of understandings to engage with people in an interesting and creative way. So it's kind of like, how can we use, you know, messenger apps in a very interesting and creative way? You know, how can we start thinking differently with these platforms? So I think, you know, for brands and businesses, and I'm not saying that's for all of them, but certainly for the kind of like the bigger brands, they really need to be thinking about how do we start using these channels, particularly things like Snapchat and, you know, or messenger pieces, because, you know, you need to be adventurous. You need to be kind of experimenting and looking for new platforms. So, I mean, before it was your website, then suddenly it moved into your website and your social channels. Now it went into, it could have gone into an app. So your digital ecosystem's getting bigger and it's getting a lot more complex. Because you need to keep evolving, innovating.
Yeah, it's interesting, David, because when you look at it, it's almost like you need three operating systems. You need one operating system, call it iOS 9, that looks after the present. And that's where everybody is now, or the majority of people are, somewhere on iOS 8.111 or whatever.
Yeah.
Then you have somebody in the company looking at iOS 11 and they're kind of going, you know, this is where it's going in the near term. And then you have someone on iOS 16.
Your
then you have someone on iOS 16 who's a fruitcake or seen as a fruitcake.
Yeah.
Who's, like you say, about the futurists working on the movies in the past, the avant-garde, who were kind of, and this is the problem, they are seen as the crazy scientist.
Yeah.
And they're kind of going, well, this is where it's going. Nobody's listening to me because everybody's incentivized to hit their targets in the present.
Yeah.
And it's one of the challenges. And I don't blame anyone because it's just the way the success metrics are measured. You're measured on your near-term targets. So that means, you know, it's a cost to have somebody working on next year or the year after. And then it's even a bigger cost to have someone who's essentially an R&D type lab working on 5 years or 10 years or where and when you look at, when you compare any company, even a large company, to somebody like Facebook have done that. They're going, this is where we are today, and they're still maintaining Facebook. Then they're buying in stuff like the messenger apps, and then they're actually working on Oculus, and they're kind of going, you know, this is where it's going. We're going to have that ready when everybody catches up, and then we'll keep doing it again. And that cycle—it's that constant cycle of reinventing the future.
Yeah, and they're so well set up because they have a startup mentality and a really innovative way of working. So they're working in sprints, really, really forward thinking, as you say. And you know, it was the same. You know, and I really like the analogy of the operating system, because it was something I would say to clients, like, you know, I mean, you know. Even for example, in our industry, you know, we're operating on an old operating system, and if the world has changed, you need to kind of look at your operating system. That's why in Huskies we look at a different operating system. It's kind of like very collaborative, using the approach of lean startup and sprints and agile. It's really, how do we go through really rapid prototyping of ideas? Now, it's not necessarily in the tech product thing that we're pumping out, but it's really in those innovative ideas. And I think if you create an environment where you can allow that to flourish, then you can have those people remain. So, like, you know, the campaigners, the crazy scientist person, because you really do need that cross diversity in your business to be looking at the now, but also looking at the future as well. And as you say, the you know, the tech companies and the big Goliaths, they have the perfect kind of petri dishes for that, you know. So it's just about, you need to keep at the pace. I was at a great chat recently. It was the guys from intercom, and it was Des Trainer in the Olympia, and he was, you know, he just made it very, very clear, you have to keep this pace, this cyclical pace, turning at the same pace that society is kind of going. Mm. If you're not moving at that pace, you will be left behind.
There's a great, I think it was Jack Welch, a great quote, that if the pace of change on the outside exceeds the pace of the change on the inside, the end is nigh. That's kind of, you know, it's a bit Nostradamus, but it's like you need to look at the future. Otherwise, you're going to be so far left behind.
Yeah, I mean, there was a really controversial kind of piece put out a few months ago, Jules Eckhart from, and it was the State of the Digital Nation. And it's a scathing, but also very enlightening kind of, you know, view of kind of, let's say, the world of digital, particularly when it comes to, let's say, the advertising industry and the kind of product development industry. But he's just saying, look, the disruption that's happening is happening at such a phenomenal pace that people will, and whole businesses are going to be left behind. And it's, he equates it to Rome as burning, you know, and people are essentially on the kind of balconies playing fiddles as the industry is just going to be, they're going to wake up one day and it's going to be completely gone. It's the same with the music industry, you know, the same with the transportation, you know, sector. So digital is having a massive effect, and you can even see it from, you know, the major consultancies and their reports saying, you know, how every business has to be digitally fit. And I think, you know, for ourselves anyway, that's a realization, you know, Huskies as an agency, for example, we're 17 years old, we're kind of digital DNA. We did Ireland's first banner ad, but we're always constantly, we kind of know that we have to kind of keep moving. We have to keep innovating. We have to keep evolving, because if we don't, we're dust.
The challenge I would see for the likes of Huskies, and you don't have to answer this, but is you already see the future, but a lot of your clients are actually grappling to catch up even with the present. So, or even the past. Like, so the common scenario, somebody comes in, they go, we need to work on our social media strategy. They're thinking Facebook and Twitter like 8 years ago. You're kind of going, that's 8 years old. You should have been doing that. You should have had a community manager who was that interface with your company. And we've moved on now. So we actually moved to the world of messenger apps, and that's where it's at now. And they grapple with that. And so many times people have told me, you know, my brand doesn't want to look at Snapchat. Mm. You kind of go, yeah, but by the time you catch up, that audience will be in their 20s and they will be your client, you know? So I know, there's a feel of Snapchat that it's only 15-year-olds who use Snapchat. Totally untrue.
Yeah.
You know, and it's overtaken. I was at a conference recently, Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
And I looked at people's phones to see were they tweeting? Nobody was on Twitter. They were all on Snapchat.
Yeah.
And they were Snapchatting the whole event. And that was a real moment. And they were all mid-20s. The audience was mid-20s to 30s. And they were all Snapchatting. And that was, for me, a real wake-up to go, this is now. It's not something that I need to deal with to cater for that future audience or future client I might have. I have to move right now.
Yeah, and you know, there are so many businesses that don't even have a presence even as a website. You know, I mean, they're so far behind when it kind of comes to digital kind of maturity. So, I mean, you know, the cold hard reality is that the businesses that don't have that will be impacted, and, you know, will be very, very difficult for them to survive. I'm not saying that they will all fall away, but as you rightly point out, it is challenging for us, you know, as an agency. We have a job, I suppose, to kind of educate and bring them along. But it is kind of, and you know, some of our clients are really, really fantastic at kind of, you know, taking that step. I'm particularly impressed with Fáilte Ireland and their kind of adoption of kind of, you know, understanding that, I suppose, traditional destination advertising is something that doesn't really appeal anymore. They understand, okay, we really need to evolve and change and kind of look at different content formats, how we kind of engage, how we use these kind of platforms to kind of distribute our content out there, engage. So, I mean, there's flickers of hope, which is great, but is at the pace of adoption as fast as it should be? definitely not. Like, and you know, I would urge, I suppose, all kind of people within the marketing sector to really, you know, take a look at these kind of platforms, engage with your kind of agencies to understand, you know, what are the opportunities here? Because this is about future-proofing, and it's about building a resilient business model for you moving ahead. And if you're to do that with a very sophisticated young audience coming up who are total digital natives, I mean, that was a term that was used for, you know, ourselves, which we're, and we're not. Yeah. I mean, these are absolute digital natives. So, you know, business is about planning ahead. And, you know, it's that idea of now people talking about this thing of the long near. You know, Elon Musk thinking of this idea of we're no longer thinking in 4-year terms, we're thinking in generational terms.
Yeah.
And if you're to build your business from a generational point of view, you really need to look at how digital is impacting your business across all sectors, I suppose.
But because you're so right. But the other thing is that it will change. So it's not a straight line. It's not a clear A to B, because it will change again, and the acceptance of that, and you know that we hear time and time again about fail and fail quickly. It's actually more realize quickly that, you know, this isn't working, and kind of going, look, we can't keep on this path because that doesn't lead anywhere anymore. We need to go into this path and have, you know, and I always think of that operating system analogy, because it's almost like the movie Sliding Doors. You kind of go, well, there's this path, and this path. We need to follow them all, because one of them's going to be a winner. It's like betting on three horses and kind of go, one of them's going to win, but we need to actually cater for all three, because we don't know where the end game is. All we know is we can infer that this is going to happen based on global trends. You know, you mentioned before that the whole chat app, that rise was happening all the time, and you know, people ignored it, and they're so grappling to keep up on social networks that they ignored that. And then in late 2015, the messenger apps just took over.
Yeah. And I you know, as you say, the data was there. And if we talk about data, for example, you know, and digital allows us to kind of measure it. You know, we have great measurement capabilities now. We have the ability to really understand, you know, all levels. So how do you, if you can't measure, you can't manage it. And digital gives us that opportunity to kind of manage things. But also it allows us to kind of see those trends kind of emerging. You know, if we take a kind of helicopter view back, and I think, you know, particularly for businesses, because businesses might be listening to this kind of going, that's all very well and good. You know, do I go into Snapchat? Do I go into this? And it's not saying you just need to jump from one thing to another thing. You need to see it in the context of your whole business. You need to see, you know, what's your business objectives? What are you trying to achieve? And look at the data in a very interesting way. But also, you know, use this data to help you plan properly. So for some businesses, maybe that's not the right channel for them to go, but there are certainly a whole plethora of ways of engaging with your customers or with people out there. And data is, I suppose, there's a term as well that's used a lot, you know, big data. But it's really kind of understood. Like, so for example, if we take social, for example, you know, we can really understand what's the kind of content people are engaging with through these channels. How long are they engaging with it? How are they sharing with it? You know, we really start to get a really deep understandings of people's behaviors. And for me, that's the great thing about digital. It is very measurable. And even from a business point of view, that's what business owners want to see. They want to see, can we measure this? And you can. You just need to kind of have all of those kind of pieces working together.
It's like the mention of, you know, all those analytics and insights are available on the social networks, and people. You said earlier on about I need to do my social media strategy, and it's this idea of it's a push, so it's an output. Mm. But social media, if you do output, is an input feed. So you're constantly getting this input. Is it working? Is it not? But also, if you start listening on social, you can go, what are people asking for around my brand? Not necessarily mentioning my brand, but what are they asking for? What's the gap in the market that I can fulfill with my product? And if I can just step into that space, I'm on a total track for success. Which brings me to this point. So we've talked kind of about the landscape, etc. But what advice would you give to brands on chat apps, on messenger apps?
I'd say definitely explore them and look at them and see how you can start to work with them. You know, there's interesting brands doing fantastic stuff. Clark Shoes did from the Rude Boys to Rats experimentation, which was a whole kind of documentary on WhatsApp. Hellman's in South America did a really fantastic thing called What's Cook. And you know, if you think the open rates, for example, on SMS are 98%. Like, do you know what I mean? If you apply that same logic to WhatsApp groups, you've got an immediate access into the pockets of people. So I would encourage definitely brands to start exploring it, you know, and looking at what they can kind of do in that space. So I think it's just really about trial and experimentation, you know. Start looking at it, looking at these platforms, and start thinking about social in a completely different way. As you say, it's about listening. And more often than not, there's too many businesses and brands kind of pushing out their own message all the time and not listening enough. And as you say, we've got fantastic tools where we can now listen to kind of conversations that go on social. Like any good conversation, you know, it's about between any good human interaction. People that don't talk a lot and listen, you know, what they're gathering information and they're really interested in you, you know, and that whole piece of listening is really, really key, because you get these little nuggets and insights, and then you can engage with your audience through kind of WhatsApp kind of platforms at the right time and in the right way. So I definitely encourage it. We need to kind of keep looking at these emerging technologies and seeing how we can explore them.
Brilliant. Okay. And one last question for you, because we've started asking our guests, what books would you recommend? So your latest book, what you'd recommend that's on your read list?
God, I'm reading a few. I mean, I'm reading Sprint by Google Ventures at the moment. It's kind of about whole prototyping, using 5-day prototyping. And it's like how to develop products in these kind of 5-day sprints. And it's part of Google Ventures, which is this whole kind of VC kind of fund. I'm actually reading again Kevin Kelly's What Technology Wants. He was at the recent Cannes piece, and they're the two that I'm kind of reading at the moment.
Well, David Hayes, Director of Social Search and Performance Media, thank you very much.